Thank you.
I'm going to call the admin committee to order. Carol, if you want to call, roll call.
Board Member Muroff will be chairing this committee. Chair Lawrence, John Cordisco, Mark Dambly will be joining momentarily in the boardroom. Tom Ellis, Scott Frieda, Kevin Johnson.
Here.
Bill Leonard, Dan Muroff.
Here.
Michael Carroll.
Thanks, Carol. Steve? Your mic's off.
Good afternoon. SEPTA's current property insurance program will expire on October 1st, 2024. The expiring policy with Factory Mutual provides coverage for physical damage to SEPTA's buildings, buses, and rolling stock. A separate terrorism policy is with Liberty Mutual and a standalone bridge policy with Chubb. The expiring property insurance program has a $750 million property limit with a $3.5 million self-insured retention, a $100 million terrorism limit, and a $25 million bridge limit with a $2.5 self-insured retention. These policies cover $10.45 billion in assets and have an expired premium of $3,334,567. SEPTA worked with Connor Strong and Buckaloo, one of SEPTA's insurance brokers, to renew this year's property insurance program. The property insurance market is showing some signs of price softening, but remains sensitive due to continued losses associated with major wind and storm events nationally and abroad. Additionally, the bridge insurance market hardened as a result of the Scott Key Bridge collapse. The scope of this renewal included insured values, favorable loss history, and rolling stock of both buses and rail vehicles. SEPTA is receiving a 25% membership credit from Factory Mutual for a final premium of $2,644,011 for $9.99 billion of insured values. Another discount was negotiated with the terrorism carrier Convex to bring the new premium down to $47,320. Chubb is not renewing their bridge policy with SEPTA, and as a result, the bridge program was marketed to include domestic carriers, Bermuda and London. A new carrier, Lexington, is providing a layer program with domestic and London markets to maintain the 25 million limit. This program includes a lower self-insured retention of 1 million from the prior 2.5 million limit at a premium of $635,000 plus fees. The total cost of the property insurance, including bridge insurance, terrorism insurance, and fees, will not exceed $3,326,851, which is $7,716 lower than the expiring program. Staff recommends approval of the proposed property insurance program.
Thank you, Steve. I also want to recognize that Representative Martina White joined the meeting. Anybody have any questions? This is the price. So the cost has gone down this year in aggregate.
The total cost of the program. I did outline the three policies.
Right. Any questions? All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Andy. And you can just, pause between items, and if we have questions, we'll raise.
Okay, we'll do. Good afternoon. This next item is for the award of two architectural engineering consulting contracts for A&E services for the communications and signals engineering for a three-year period for a total ceiling amount of $7 million each. The consultants will be required to provide design and engineering for various communication and signals projects on a task order basis for the upgrade and renewal of the communications and signals physical plant. Two proposals were received and were evaluated by a technical evaluation committee based on a maximum numerical scoring of 190 points. Both firms received an average score of 165.5. Negotiations were conducted with both proposers Burns Engineering, Inc., and T.Y. Lynn International, and their rates and fees were negotiated to comparable rates well within the industry standards and similar to other A&E contracts. Burns and T.Y. Lynn are the incumbent CSEC firms and have performed satisfactorily and are recommended for award.
Just a question for you.
Any question?
What was their proposal versus their reduction once you decided to advance this?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
So they originally gave you a proposal, right? And after the proposal, you all had a negotiation. What was the difference in those numbers?
So so their original proposal was based on man hours. Based on positions within their teams and their hourly rates. And those hourly rates, as well as the escalations, were negotiated. Because of the fact that this is a task order contract, there's a lump sum, a ceiling of $7 million. But each project would be issued on its own task order. And the level of effort and the hourly rates that would be applied to each project would be based on the hourly rates that were submitted. Okay. That's why you don't see a lump sum cost for this.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Okay. Kevin?
No, I don't
know.
Two questions, Annie. If there had been only one bidder for one contract, it would be the single bidder reach out to other firms with two bidders for two contracts. Do you do the same type of thing to reach out why other firms didn't submit?
We did not do a single bid survey or a similar single bid survey for this, Mr. Johnson. In the past, we were trying to figure out how many more proposals we had, in the past, but this is more, it's very specific, it's signals and communications. Not a lot of our engineering firms or consultants around here would do that work, and if they do, they probably would come in and have either Burns or T.Y. Lynn as a sub-consultant, to their team.
Second question is, I know on the GECs and other contracts, SEPTA's negotiated the profit margin with firms. Was that done with these as well?
I believe it was. Normally when we do negotiate GEC-type contracts, we look at the hourly rates, the escalations, as well as their fees, including the profit, and we try to make sure that it is within industry standards. I could give you additional information as far as what the profit was negotiated to as part of this contract.
Okay.
Thank you. Can I ask, Andy, which one of these consultants handled signals?
They both do. So we're awarding two contracts to both of these consultants for the communication and signals.
Okay. I thought it was split between the two. One was doing one and one was doing the other. But were they involved in trolley modernization in the planning stages?
I don't believe so.
I don't believe they were involved with the planning stages, trolley modernization. They may be a sub to whoever the prime was. I mean, we can check into that and get back to you.
Well, I mean, there's signals involved with the trolley modernization program, right?
Well, so Burns is was the selected vendor for the replacement of the trolley tunnel signal system, and they are actively on that right now.
Are there signals? Is it just traffic signals beyond that out on the street? Forget the tunnel for a minute.
For trolley modernization, yeah, it's all street running with traffic signals.
Okay. I guess what I was driving at was whether they were consulted in the planning stages of trolley modernization and the budgeting. That signal cost.
I don't believe so. If they were involved with the preliminary design of the signal system, they wouldn't have been able to bid on the design of the signal system.
Okay.
Any other questions? Any?
Okay. This next item is for the award of a professional. Next item is for the award of another architectural and engineering consulting contract for the design and construction-related services for the Cornwall's Heights ADA station improvements. The proposed design will make the station fully ADA accessible and includes full-length high-level platforms, new passenger shelters and amenities, wayfinding and signage improvements, security improvements, and access to station building and parking areas, and an overpass bridge between the inbound and outbound passenger platforms using stairs and elevators. 8 proposals were received, which were rated by a technical evaluation committee using numerical scoring with a maximum score of 190 points. listing of the proposed firms and their scoring is shown on page 2 of the staff summary. In accordance with the Brooks Act that governed federally funded A&E contract awards, negotiations were conducted with Gana Fleming Inc., the highest scored proposer of 175 points. The final negotiated amount of $5,217,759 is approximately 5% lower than staff's estimate and is deemed fair and reasonable and recommended for award.
Any questions?
Go ahead. The next item is for the award of a professional services consultant contract for safety and engineering services for a 3-year base term period with 2 1-year option terms to be exercised at the authority's sole discretion for a total ceiling amount not to exceed $3,750,000. The consultant will be engaged on a task order basis to provide various services to enhance a proactive culture of safety throughout the authority in accordance with all regulatory requirements. This includes assessing current safety risk and exposures, update current safety programs, plans and materials, and develop and document new safety processes, policies, and procedures. Two proposals were received and evaluated by a technical evaluation committee. Negotiations were conducted with the two proposers, KNJ Safety and Security Consulting Services, Inc., and ADS System Safety Consulting, LLC, who were ranked superior and very good, respectively, and considered within the competitive range. KNJ Safety and Security Consulting Services is the highest ranked firm with a superior ranking and proposed the lowest BAFO average hourly rate of $122.32 an hour. Their proposal has been determined to be the most advantageous to the authority. They are the incumbent and has performed satisfactorily and are recommended for award.
Eddie, where did it come in relative to projected? Above or below? I didn't hear what you said. Your estimated, your anticipated budget.
So this will be a contract that will be issued for a contract ceiling of about $3.75 million.
I know, and was it above or below anticipated?
So again, this is another one of those task order contracts where there will be projects, separate projects issued under this contract.
This is the cap, I understand, but still, nevertheless. Okay, so
there isn't a lump sum value for the project, and there's no way to compare that to right. What the estimate is. But their hourly rates, you know, are within the reasonable range.
Hourly. Any questions?
Remind me, Andy, are these folks going to be involved with the FTA-related safety issues?
Their work will be, yes. To what extent? Ron Keeley, our safety chief officer, is coming up.
Can we also discuss what type of reporting requirements that we have of them and how that gets to the safety committee and to the board?
To answer the question, yes, they will be involved in helping us with the responses to the FTA.
So they're going to start right away? Or are they already on board?
They're already on board.
They're the incumbent.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Ron, what type of reporting requirements do they have to the team, and how often does that information get circulated?
Weekly. They're helping with everything. So they're here weekly. They're giving us reports weekly. We're giving them work on a regular basis.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? We have one speaker, Alfonso Dandridge. That on? Okay. All right. I think that completes the business of the admin committee.
I'd like to call to order the operations committee. Mike Carroll. Here. Mark Dambly. Tom Ellis.
Here.
Rob Fox. Scott.
Here.
Kevin.
Here.
Dan.
Here.
Okay. Kelly Edwards.
Good afternoon.
Oh, and Representative Wade is on too. Oh, and John Cordisco. Welcome, you guys.
Good afternoon. Pier 70 was removed from the agenda, so I'm going to move on to 11200 Roosevelt Boulevard. To obtain approval from SEPTA's board to lease 57,645 square feet of warehouse space at 11200 Roosevelt Boulevard in Philadelphia from AB Roosevelt Property LLC for Supply Chain Management, SCM. SEPTA was able to negotiate a three-year lease for $519,957 annual base rent at $7.37 a square foot with 2% annual increases and operating expenses estimated to be $1.64 a square foot for a $1,585,534 total, which covers the triple net lease. Staff recommends the board authorize the lease of a portion of the property located at 11200 Roosevelt Boulevard in Philadelphia, PA, from AB Roosevelt Property, LLC, under the terms and conditions set forth above.
Thank you, Kelly. Are you new to the job?
I've been here for a year and a half.
Oh, I haven't seen you around. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. So late. Happy to be here.
Okay. Kim?
Good afternoon. We are seeking approval of to enter into a site-specific agreement with T-Mobile Northeast LLC to occupy SEPTA's property for telecommunication equipment under an existing master agreement. SEPTA and T-Mobile have an existing agreement that will expire in November 30th of 2024. T-Mobile has requested to continue the occupancy for the space for an additional 5 years with three additional five-year options. The initial first-year rent is $37,584.81 with an annual rent increase of 3%. That will pay SEPTA approximately $1,012,336 over 20 years, including all options. Staff recommends approval of T-Mobile requests to extend the occupancy of the lease space at Comley Station. Any questions?
Thank you, Kim.
Okay.
I recognize you, Kim. Thanks for coming back. Andy, your turn. You know the drill.
Okay. First item is for an award of a sale of material contract for scrap metal removal and disposal services for ferrous and non-ferrous material for a five-year period. The vendor will place various size dumpsters for the loading of scrap metal materials and to be hauled off and replaced on an as-needed basis at 23 depot and yard locations. The vendor is also required to use an independent third-party commercial fit-for-trade scale with state seal to provide weight tickets for each dumpster removed. Bidders were instructed to use the fast market steel scrap prices and non-ferrous scrap prices daily market index in their bid pricing at the time of bid, which will result in their pricing either escalated or de-escalated at the time of the dumpster removal throughout the life of the contract, and that will determine the amount paid to the authority. Three offers were received, and Allegheny, Aryan, and Metal Company, Inc. has determined the highest compliant offer with an estimated total revenue to SEPTA in the amount of $2,252,649, which is within 6% of staff's independent cost estimate. They are the incumbent and performing satisfactorily.
If the market crashes, is there a floor at zero? I mean, do we have an operational need or a regulatory need to remove the material regardless of what the price is, or is this at our convenience?
Yes, so the removal of the material is basically at our convenience. Once the dumpsters are full, we call in for them to take it off the site and dispose of it.
Okay.
The next item is for the award of a contract for the purchase of LED lights for the Beechwood Brookline Station to support the Northtown High Speed Line Station Rehabilitation Project as part of the Infrastructure System Renewal Program. These will address the obsolescence of the current lighting and will be LED dimmable and can be controlled remotely and are part of SEPTA's energy management system. Six bids were received, with the lowest bidder, Globecom Technologies, Inc., disqualified for bidding an alternate product that was not compatible with SEPTA's current lighting standards, including remote monitoring and control. North Star Electrical Supply Company, Inc., the second lowest bidder, has determined the lowest compliant bidder for $122,373.55, which is approximately 6% lower than staff's independent cost estimate. The next award.
Wait a minute, Andy. Do we make an effort to estimate how many of these bulbs we're going to use and buy them all at once and try to get a bulk purchase discount instead of buying them every contract that comes along and needs 100 new lamps, given that?
So these are basically complete light fixtures that would be replacing existing existing light fixtures that are at the station and other areas that need to be lit. And we're buying them on a project by project. We are looking at trying to see if that we could combine projects into, a bulk buy and be able to buy them, for multiple projects at a time.
Yeah, volume discounts, right?
Sure. The next contract award is for the purchase of signals and communications materials, including pre-wired instrument houses and cases for the new Beth interlocking on SEPTA's regional rail and the Chamonix portion of the West Trenton line, which are to be installed by our in-house forces. Once completed, this new interlocking will facilitate the construction of the Jenkintown Station ADA improvements projects. Three bids were received, and ExoRail Inc., the lowest compliant bidder for $4,824,511, which is approximately 6% lower than staff's independent cost estimate, and they have provided similar materials in the past. The next contract award is for the purchase of an estimated 71,000 gallons of exterior vehicle cleaner for use by various bus and rail depots to be delivered on an as-required basis over a two-year period. Three bids were received, with the lowest bidder, PAR Automation Solutions, LLC, disqualified for offering a non-approved product. Ardex Laboratories, Inc. is determined to be the lowest compliant bidder for $318,080, which is approximately 6% lower than the previous per gallon unit price paid in June of 2023.
Andy, how long does 71,000 gallons last?
Well, we're hoping they'll last for the two-year period that we have. I'm not sure if someone here could let us know how much we use on a monthly basis.
Or when was the last time we made the order?
Last time we bought them was back in June of 23, and I'm not sure whether that was the time we only bought them for 1 year. I could definitely get back to you with that information. Or maybe we did buy it for 2 years and then we just ran short a year and a few months into the contract. But we could get back to you with that information.
Thank you.
The next award is for a blanket contract for international truck parts to be used on an as-required basis over a three-year period. These parts will be used by Cortland Utility Shop to repair the authority's non-revenue vehicles. The award is based on a bidder offering the highest discount of a manufacturer parts list price. Two bids were received, and Ascendance Trucks Eastern PA LLC offered the highest discount rate of 40% for the total estimated amount of $1,336,128.60, which represents an approximately 2.38% higher discount as compared to the previous purchase in June of 2021. The next items for the award of a contract for the purchase of 800 rebuilt nitrogen oxide sensors to be used for general maintenance and running repairs for the Nova bus fleet. Six bids were received, and the lowest three were disqualified for offering a non-approved alternate part. J. David White Associates, Inc. is determined the lowest compliant bidder with bid unit price of $435 with a $150 core charge for a total amount not to exceed $468,000. Their bid unit price represents a variance of 2.63% as compared to the previous purchase made in January 2024. The next items for the award of a contract for the Media Shannon Headline Route 101 rehabilitation and reconstruction of Bridge 3.70 and Bridge 3.77 over Darby Creek, which were originally built in 1912, with the outbound track superstructure replaced in 1997. The project is in support of the trolley modernization program to strengthen the bridges for the new vehicle loading. Work consists of demolition and replacement of the existing bridges superstructures, which will be completed during a continuous 14-day track and power outage planned between February 15 of 2025 and March 1st of 2025. Three bids were received, and JPC Group, Inc. is the lowest bidder for $1,738,000, which is approximately 4.8% higher than staff's reconciled cost estimate.
How many trolley lines run over that bridge?
It's just the 101, the Media Sharon Hill 101.
Okay, and is that bridge in such a state of disrepair that we have to do it right now?
It's two bridges, 370 and 377. One of them's over Darby Creek. The other one's over a tributary to Darby Creek. Just by aging out of the system, at some point, this is on our state of good repair backlog. It's not an emergency contract. We don't have to do it this minute, but it helps us back off that $5 billion number a little bit at a time.
Is it on the critical path of that project?
Of trolley mod? Yes.
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 Even though it's just one line?
Even though it's just one line, because it can't support the new vehicle loads. It's not strong enough. The way that it's built right now, it does not have the capacity to support the higher loads of the new trolleys.
Right, but I thought with respect to infrastructure projects, we were going to front load the tunnel improvements first, not bridges that relate to one specific line.
This is just part of the overall program of what we have to do with the infrastructure. So does it have to be done first? No, but it's better that we get it done now so that we're prepared down the line. And this is really a smaller investment.
Okay.
Kate, while you're there,
yep.
You know, as I read, this is number seven, but as I read it, this just to me says change orders all over again. So are we confident that this is the number? Are we done our due diligence? Are we going to miss something here? Has somebody else missed anything? Because when you're talking $5 million, if that ends up being $6 million or $7 million, we have the same old conversation again, and that's just something I'm worried about.
You said numbers. Are we still talking about the bridges?
Yeah. The JPC group is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. What? I don't know what number seven is. Which part?
This is JPC group for Muni Sharon Hill Line.
Yep.
So, yes, the two bridges. So, it just the way this reads, the next time, I mean, I see a change order coming within this. So, we're, as you know, we're working hard to try to eliminate some of these.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, as we're talking about them, you know, what some of the questions I'll be asking is, have we done our due diligence? Is this going to come back to us? And what do those numbers look like? If this is a $5 million project that we're doing in piecemeal, it's almost inevitable.
So one of the things that was done in there, and I believe it's in the staff summary, we actually bid out the materials separately. So the superstructure steel and the bearings were bid out separately. They're already underway. We're evaluating shop drawings. So that's a big piece of why the number is lower than it would have been originally. We did a lot more during design to try to make sure that we're not running into those change orders that we normally have seen historically.
So are we going to run into them? I guess is really the question.
I'm hopeful that what we've done to this point is enough that we won't see things outside of our control, right? I mean, we've done as much as we can, but sometimes there are unforeseen conditions. I can't guarantee that we won't have unforeseen conditions, but we've done more due diligence during design to try to at least minimize the number of change orders that we would see on a project like this.
Thank you, Kate.
Sure.
The next item is for the award of multiple contracts for the purchase of 48 new pickup trucks to replace existing vehicles that have surpassed their useful life, as well as our replacements for vehicles currently leased or rented, which are not cost effective for the authority. Four bids were received, with Nelson Ford of Morristown Inc. being the lowest compliant bidder for the compact pickup truck crew cab for $162,700. Pacifico Ford Inc. for the standard cab pickup truck and standard cab pickup with plow and spreader for $2,021,470.12. And Mark Anthony Chevrolet, doing business as Pellegrino Chevrolet, for the crew cab pickup truck for $384,783. Their bids are approximately 7% lower, 5% higher, and 2% lower, respectively, than staff's independent cost estimates. All three proposed awardees have satisfactorily provided the authority with similar vehicles in the past. So we had four bids come in, Mr. Leonard, and this contract was set up where it's H or any, where we could award any type of truck to the lowest bidder. So basically, you know, we had four bids come in, and we had four groups, so we have a total of 16 bids that come in. if I'm doing the math right.
Four bidders
and four, right. Yeah, I mean, these are normally your local dealerships within the area. I'd have to take a look at whether these are either Ford or Chevy trucks, but they're basically just your, you know, your pickup dealerships in the area. The next contract awards is for internal rail flow detection services, which includes inspections, detection, reporting, and training services for a 3-year period, which are required by CFR 49 track safety standards. The authority is required to inspect all rail modes twice per calendar year. These services include the use of a self-propelled rail equipment and walk-behind equipment for testing inaccessible areas. Two bids were received, and ProTrax Inc. submitted the lowest bid for $1,499,000, which is approximately 3% lower than staff's reconciled cost estimate. ProTrax Inc. is a new vendor receptor. However, their subsidiary affiliate, UltraTrax Inc., have satisfactorily provided similar services to other transit agencies such as St. Louis Metro, the Regional Transportation District in the state of Colorado, and the South Florida Regional Transportation Authority.
Thank you. The first item is a contract award for Bitrode Corporation for the purchase of a Bitrode battery charger for the M4 railcar batteries, which will extend the battery life 10 to 15 years. Bitrode is the only company that has all the charging features needed and is recommended by and will not void warranties currently in place by the battery system manufacturers currently in use on these cars. Bitrode's proposed cost of $173,550 is approximately 8% lower than staff's independent cost estimate. The next item is an award of a contract to American Software Inc. for licensing, maintenance, and support of the ASI software package for a 1-year base term and 1-year option term to be exercised at the authority's sole discretion. ASI is a procurement and supply chain management software that supports activities such as purchasing, procurement matching, inventory control, and accounting and bill of material. The software is a proprietary product of ASI, and ASI is the only entity capable of providing the license, maintenance, and support services. ASI's proposal of $490,190.13 for the base and option term, if exercised, is approximately 3% higher than staff's independent cost estimate.
Is this a software application that'll be wrapped up in the larger project we're doing with respect to our computers?
The M4 project?
Yeah.
Yes.
So this is only a temporary thing until we get the larger picture?
Yeah, that's why there was a base and an option here in case.
Okay.
The next item is a contract award to Via Transportation, Inc., doing business as Remix Technologies, LLC, for transit planning software as a service platform for a period of 5 years. The web-based transit planning software suite integrates bus route planning, street design, geospatial analysis, and stakeholder engagement in one analytical software package. Remix is the only cloud-based software platform that provides all these components, which are essential to SEPTA's current transit planning and decision-making, in addition to its comprehensive bus network redesign initiative. Remix's cost proposal of $1,175,000 is approximately 1% higher than staff's independent cost estimate.
Is this another one of the things that's going to be an M4?
No.
What are we utilizing now to do this?
Remix. So they've been using this software the last couple of years.
Yeah. And how long is the contract for?
This one will be for an additional 5 years.
Thank you.
The next contract award is to Clever Devices Limited for information technology system patches and upgrades for approximately 1,176 buses. The buses are equipped with an intelligent vehicle network system for onboard recording and displaying of the vehicle operation and health information, and this system requires patches and upgrades, fix software glitches, and critical security vulnerabilities. Clever is the vendor who originally supplied, installed, and serviced the equipment as is the only company certified to provide maintenance and support of the system. Clever's proposed cost of $570,052 is approximately 2% lower than staff's independent cost estimate.
Is this, Jim, is this sole source then, or because they're the only one who can do this?
Yes, this is a sole source still. The next contract award is to Alstom Signaling for the maintenance and software support of the centralized traffic control system, transportation management system used on the Market Frankfurt subway elevated line for a 5-year period. These services include technical assistance, consultations, on-call support, and field support and maintenance services for the software and hardware systems. Alstom is the original equipment manufacturer and supplier and the only qualified source capable of supporting and providing maintenance services for the system. Alstom's proposed cost of $636,371.42 is approximately 4% greater than staff's independent cost estimate. The next item is a contract award to Convergent Solutions Group, LLC, doing business as CSG Global Consulting, for maintenance and technical support services for the automated call distribution system for a 5-year period. The automated call distribution system receives, logs, routes, and records calls to the telephone information center, the CCT customer service dispatch call center, and the claims department intake call center. The required services include troubleshooting and repairing system malfunctions, as CSG Global Consulting is the only authorized and technically qualified source to provide these services. CSG Global Consulting's cost proposal of $913,844.30 is approximately 4% higher than staff's independent cost estimate. The next contract award is to Conduit Inc. for delivery and installation of 97 three-dimensional detection fare gates, plus 3 to be provided for use in the new payment technology lab for the authority's fare evasion deterrent program. The initial 3D fare gates pilot program implemented at 69th Street Station has proved successful with reducing fare evasion at this station and demonstrated the need to install additional 3D fare gates across the system. 9 additional sub-L stations are earmarked to receive these fare gates. Conduit Inc.'s 3D gates will allow immediate rollout of a piloted proven system with ease and cost-effective integration to the existing back-end system. The final negotiated cost of $6,960,557 is approximately 3% lower than staff's reconciled cost estimate.
Who wants to go first?
Me. Did we make any changes based on the pilot?
Yes, I'm out there.
So here's, I'm not waiting for an answer. I would like a study done of what it would have cost if we had bid everything out at once and bought them all, instead of having what I consider to be a delayed installation now for a period of time while we took a look at something that we knew was going to be an improvement over what we had. Do you understand? What I'm asking for, I'd like to see that. Okay. That's all I have.
This is irrelevant to this particular issue. Does Conduit fix the issues of the delayed payment and or the ability to make a payment on our system over the last few weeks? We've been delayed in the morning, we've been delayed at night. We've had a, prior to my arrival here, the superfluous amount of issues that continue to straggle along with our relationship with Conduit. Are they the only ones that provide this service? And if so, why are we going back looking for a different result based on our history?
We've had weekly discussions, actually daily discussions with Conduit on the delayed payment system. And I know Lisa's back. I'm sorry.
I'm here. Hi. So we're meeting with Conduit at least twice daily to ensure that our payment system stays up. So the Faregates is a different technology than the Fair payment system, where we have the tap capability. And so what we're seeing now is more system stability. And so we're continuing to work through that with Conduit. Additionally, the Conduit technical leadership team will be on site next week to work with my team so that we can ensure that the system remains stable and reliant.
So I'm pleased to report that Conduit predates both you and me. How confident are you in the working relationship and the deliverable?
In terms of the payment system, I'm gaining confidence is what I'll say, as Conduit has brought on more of their technical leadership, more of the individuals that can actually help resolve the issues. I've had a lot of meetings with their upper leadership, their global CIO, their global CTO. And so we have different people in the room. So that's one of the reasons that we're seeing more stability right now. So we're going to continue with this cadence until the system gets to where we want it to be, which is where our folks can pay in a very secure manner and a reliable manner.
So the only issue I have with that narrative is we've always had the thought process of what we want it to be, but it's never what we need it to be. And that's been the continuous issue, as I've learned over the last 18 months here, that I get this is all complicated, but we're talking about fare evasion and we're back to Conduit, which is not a new issue to us, but just an issue we're starting to talk about more and more now than we had prior, than we did last year, we'll say that. I'm just curious as to how they're the vendor to go to for this.
Nick, do you want to take on the fare gate?
Only because I've not been a part of any of those discussions that I can recall.
On the fare evasion?
Correct.
Can I take this one?
Yes. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Scott. I feel like whenever I get involved, it takes three people to answer a question. I'm sorry. So in terms of the technology for the gates, this is an area that is just starting to grow. So right now, Conduit's gate is superior over the other gates that have been brought to market. The plan with this is let's get these gates out now because we know that they work. We know that they will work well with our existing systems. The next round of gates will be doing a request for proposals, putting it out there publicly, seeing what the market has, and then evaluating Conduit along with, assuming that they submit, along with all of our competitors. But at this point in time, we've watched Boston and New York especially try out a bunch of different gates, and they have not functioned as effectively as these gates in terms of reducing fare evasion. So we feel pretty confident that at this moment in time right now, that this is the gate to go with. That could all change 6 months from now, depending on what the market bears.
Liz, I've watched at 69th Street, and I think that these gates actually, they do a good job, with one caveat. The handicap accessible gates, I've actually seen guys let people in. They've just used it as, I'm not exactly sure what they were doing. I just saw like holding it and then like people walking through, and I didn't intervene, but maybe I should have. I took note, and I wonder if this is something that that SEPTA is working with Conduit on trying to, is there a fix? I mean, I don't know if there is one, but is there a modification?
So
there, handicap accessible one.
There is. One of the positives of these gates that we haven't had before is a lot of data. So we can see when someone is walking through an open ADA gate when they haven't tapped and they aren't a paid customer. And we get daily reports from Conduit on how many instances of that we see. So before, we were watching video and analyzing turnstiles to try and manually count how many people were doing things like that. Now we get a report every morning and we know. So what this does is two things. We do know there's actual modifications to the gate we can make. They center around primarily the door pressure. So it's harder, much harder to hold that gate open for a longer period of time, of course, balancing the needs of our ADA customers. And secondly, we do have an alarm system with these gates, and we can make it louder and a bit more obnoxious to make it clear to everyone around there. So there's no wondering, what are they doing? You know that they are fare evading and everyone in the station knows it. But what we've been doing recently as well is working with the transit police on targeting specific times of day and days of the week where that fare evasion is happening more frequently. So we kind of get the best bang for our buck out of the transit police being there. And we have seen that as a very successful measure. When the transit police are standing at the gates, that type of fare evasion very rarely happens. Couple that with the fact that now our police are writing more citations than ever for fare evasion. I think we need to give it a little bit of time, but as we make those adjustments, we'll see fare evasion getting less and less at that station.
Yeah, I'll say the alarm did go off, but it was in a fairly noisy station, was just more in the din. So.
Yeah. Yep, we're working to make it louder and amplify it.
If I could just add one other item is the increased sales at the fare kiosks, about up about 50%, and revenues, additional revenues are about $315,000. We're estimating right now on a annual basis, but since installation of these 3D fare gates. So, it's, I mean, there's some improvements there.
I can see there's an improvement, for sure.
Yeah.
Liz, I'd just like to say that to the extent that the argument is we're going to wait because the technology is changing and getting better, that has to be analyzed financially against the lost, or the fare evasion that is happening in the meantime. So,
to be clear, we're not waiting. This sole source is actually us not waiting. Instead of waiting to do an RFP where we have more options to compete for the gate, we're putting these conduit gates in as many stations as we can for the next year while we work to prepare a request for proposals and let the market mature a little more. Just want to be very crystal clear on that.
So are you saying that these other stations require improvements in order to put the gates in at this point? And that's, I don't know, if we're doing all that we can, then they'd be up in every station, right?
Well, we have to balance the capacity of our internal workforces to be able to support projects like this. So we feel that these are the number of gates that we can deploy this year. We are limited with these types of gates where we can install them. They have a height limitation, and a lot of our stations, the ceiling height is too low. So what we've done is used a very data-driven approach so that these gates are going into stations with the highest number of fare evaders and ones that the transit police have identified. Okay. I think, Bill, I hear what you're asking. Could we install 300 gates this year or 500 gates this year? And are we artificially holding ourselves back by saying we just want to do this sole source? We feel these are the maximum number of gates that our teams and our contractors can get installed over the next year.
Okay. And there's no savings by going out and getting another contractor to help.
We can, but that contractor still requires a lot of internal coordination, a lot of internal oversight. A lot of the gate work that we do here is done by our internal forces because they are specialized on SEPTA systems. We'll certainly take it back, and we can work with our revenue operations team to see if we can accelerate anything more than 100 gates in the next year. But it does take some time for us to do full design for each station and then oversee the installation.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Just so I'm clear, I thought you were asking something else, Bill. I thought you were asking, why are we doing a pilot? Why did we do a pilot?
Well, I've been critical of pilots, yes. So that was part of what I was saying. But then as the discussion went on, it seemed like Kate was saying that the technology is advancing, and so, you know, we're waiting, or at least I thought this was the explanation. We're waiting because right now this is the best available, but in the future it might not be. And I was making the point at that station, like, do the analysis. Are we losing more money by not fixing it right now?
So for staff to be responsive, do you want to include both of those questions in what you get back? Like, why did we decide to do a pilot, and then why are we only doing 100 more? Are those two?
No, I mean, the decision about the pilot was done. I mean, I think I asked in some other context for a review of, is this the same thing? Of what, if we had bought them all back a year ago, whenever we bought the pilot ones,
that was the VA.
Would it have been?
But I think we want to evaluate the results of the pilot to see, is it making a difference, right? I think that was the intent. And then once we get the results, get the information, the data-driven results, then we would see, then can we move out to additional locations? I thought that's what the... I think...
Look, I mean, from my perspective, and I don't know whether I'm missing the point here, but from my perspective, it was clear at the beginning that these gates were going to make a difference in fare collection. They were going to improve it substantially. And we went ahead and installed them in one station so we could look at them. The argument, I thought, was that there may be things that we want to do after we watch this for a while to change it when we do the big procurement that's going to follow, if it works.
Yeah.
I asked, did we see any changes that were necessary? The answer was no. So the pilot just was a delay in the implementation of something from the beginning that I thought everybody had believed was going to improve the fare collection. I don't understand why we waited. I questioned it then. I still question it. And now I'm asking whether we can actually quantify what was lost by looking at, if we had bought it then, what would it have cost versus what we're paying now?
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly new technology. These 3D gates was new technology for Conduent to put together, to install, to everything was new. So that was not
so, true. Yeah. So I'll just say, I think it's reasonable to do a pilot. Yeah. I think the board can have a conversation about how much it makes sense to do it, where it does sense to do it, whether it's sense not to do it. But I felt like Bill was asking for a very specific piece of information that then the board could take back and deliberate on, which is, as best you can, a cost-benefit, what was sacrificed to doing a pilot. You can justify a pilot for a lot of different reasons, or you could argue against it. But in order to argue against it, you might need to know what was sacrificed, how much fare evasion was going on while we were waiting to see what the results of the pilot were, whether it makes sense to do it or not. And I don't know if you're still asking for that, but that's what I thought I heard.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
And, I mean, we also talked in a committee before we got here about the whole gate in front of the driver thing.
Yeah.
Now, that's, we're never going to be able to quantify how many lives we saved or how many, you know, times a person was not assaulted because of the new gates. But we know they're going to be better than what we have now. So if you're going to tell me in that context that you need a pilot of this new thing that protects our drivers, again, I ask why. Like the new device works. We know it. We see it. We can tell it's going to be better than what we have. Let's just do things when we're at that point with a technology or a device and not have this constant piloting of everything that puts projects and installation of things that we know are going to work back a year or two.
Could I make a suggestion briefly? Because I am a proponent of doing pilots, and I agree with what we just heard about not doing them necessarily all the time. But I think that maybe there needs to be a scenario where they don't last as long for these more maybe minor decisions across the system. So maybe take that under advisement. I am a proponent because I think that there needs to be more evaluations prior to making very large commitments of our dollars towards very large projects. But on the more maybe smaller things, we need to evaluate the time frame that the pilots are taking place. Thank you.
Jim, I think you're up.
The final three items are for one contract change order and four amendments. Final agreed to pricing is comparable to staff's independent cost estimate and therefore accepted as fair and reasonable. Next item is contract change order number 3 with Delaware Car Company for the repairs to 3 Norristown High Speed Line passenger railroad cars for an increase in contract value in the amount of $111,911.43 and a 13-month retroactive time extension to a revised contract completion date of September 3rd, 2025. Additional hidden damage was discovered after disassembling cars 148 and 155, which had been verified by the authority's engineering and maintenance and requires additional funds and time to perform the needed repairs. In addition, these repairs, as well as the previously approved repairs, will require a 13-month time extension to allow for lead time needed for the replacement parts and the installation efforts.
Am I misunderstanding what is meant by demolition?
Disassembling the car.
So, with the intent of reassembling the car. God.
Yes, we're not demoing the cars, no. That's right.
Next item is contract amendment number 1 with Vandor Strategies LLC, Smith Dawson and Andrews Inc., and Duane Morris Government Strategies LLC for federal legislative consultant services for additional funds in the amount of $72,000 each and a 6-month time extension. The federal legislative consulting contracts are scheduled to expire on September 30th, 2024. The requested extensions will ensure service continuity during the upcoming presidential election and the issuance of a solicitation for a new follow-on contracts award. The additional funds for the extension are based on the current monthly rates. Next item is contract amendment number 1 with Kraft Transit Inc. for operation of Route 204 bus service for a 12-month time extension and an increase in contract value in the amount of $1,023,427. The current contract expiration is September 30th, 2024, and the new bus network improves transit service in Chester County by introducing 2 new on-demand zones and increasing service frequencies and spans on the highest ridership bus corridors in the Westchester, Paoli, and Malvern area, which are expected to be rolled out in the summer of 2025. These service changes include consolidating Route 204 and Route 92 into new Route 142. Once implemented, SEPTA will no longer contract out operations for Route 204. The requested contract amendment enables Kraft and SEPTA to maintain their current Route 204 service levels until the new bus network can be implemented in Chester County in 2025.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Thank you, everyone. I think that concludes the business. Wait a minute. Is Mr. Dandridge on? Okay, all right. That concludes the business of the Operations Committee. Thank you all.